listening to Fox Sports Radio.
And welcome back to another rollicking edition of Straight Out of Vegas, the weekend version. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. So go to geico.com for a free rate quote. Now, there are three types of people in the world: those who make things happen, those who watch things happen, and those who wonder what happened. Tonight, we make it happen. We've got a lot to get to. In about 15 minutes, we'll have our own UFC expert, and he'll join us to drop some knowledge. You're going to love this guy. In fact, well, he's a rising national star. I bet you've heard of him. Plus, we've got updates from Major League Baseball, which I will have some things to say later in the show. If you followed my tweet since May 16th, I've told you this is going to be ugly. We'll talk NBA, a best bet from Sleepy, and of course, Mackinon Sports at the end of the show. But first, I've actually got an opening monologue I need you to pay close attention to, and I'm going to start it in just a minute. Remember, sports are entertainment, but they are more than that. They are a shared experience. As such, people want to talk about them, so you've come to the right place. We've got a lot to talk about tonight. This is Straight Out of Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. As they say in Prince Rogers, Nelson, Minnesota, it's going to be lit. All right, tonight it's time for me to deliver my open memo to Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots. And let me start by saying redemption is good for the soul. By the end, you'll hear my case, my very strong case, advocating that Kraft give Colin Kaepernick a chance to earn a job with the New England Patriots. Not a handout, merely a chance, an opportunity. See, the Patriots, well, they're the self-proclaimed paragon of integrity. So here's a chance to prove it. All right, you know, look, all I ask is that those who are listening tonight, they don't listen selectively. Listen objectively. There have been a lot of positive messages coming out of the NFL the last 10 days, including from the commissioner. But what action will follow, if any? See, there's an old saying in life, the smallest deed will always outweigh the greatest intention. So, Robert Kraft, if you're listening, and I know you are, please extend an invitation to Colin Kaepernick and give him a chance to win the job. Here's my case. Listen closely. For starters, don't give me this Jarrett Stidham, Brian Hoyer crap. There's no such thing as rebuilding in Foxborough. Stidham threw four passes for 14 yards and one interception last season. Now, he may be a fine quarterback at some point in the future, but you have no idea right now. You're guessing. And Brian Hoyer, it's his third tour of duty in New England. And just to be clear, he's 16-22 as a starter in the NFL, lifetime. And he started exactly the same number of games for the Patriots as Jarrett Stidham. And Jared from Subway, for that matter. Back to Kaepernick. I frankly have no idea if this would work. But aren't you at least curious? Yeah, I know. I've heard all the reasons against it. So let's unpack them one by one. Reason number one. He's been out of the league. He's been out of the game for over 3 years. Yeah, well, so is Michael Vick. He did okay. Andre Agassi, Tommy John, Josh Hamilton, Rocky Blyer. I could go on. The list is longer than you think. All spent time away from their respective sports, but they came back. They had success. See, you can either play or you can't. Rather than assume Kaepernick can't, why not find out for real? Reason number two. Well, this would just be a publicity stunt. Really? Yeah, kind of like Michael Jordan was for the White Sox or Tim Tebow was for the Mets. Well, if it is just that, well, bring it on. Sometimes publicity stunts happen to work very well, especially if they can help you win football games, which the Pats really need to do next year. They have the toughest schedule in the NFL. They have nothing to lose. Could Cap help them win? I don't know, but aren't you curious? You know, remember at one point, Belichick was curious enough to bring Tim Tebow into camp back in 2013 to see if he had anything left in the tank. And I'm glad he did. As you know, Tim Tebow was cut, but not before making the decision after seeing him on the field. For the record, Tim Tebow in that preseason was 11 of 30 for 145 yards with two touchdowns and two interceptions. But he had his chance, and he was grateful. Reason number three. Well, this would just be tokenism. Really? Well, that's not for you and me to decide. There's only one person that could make that determination, And that's Colin Kaepernick. If he turned down the offer because he felt that way, well, then that's his right, and this conversation is over. But aren't you curious as to what he would say if Belichick and Kraft opened their arms? Besides, I don't want to hear about Seattle being a fit. They have Russell Wilson, and Cap would have no shot to win the job. Same with Baltimore. They're set with Lamar Jackson. And Cap just isn't going to carry a clipboard. Not in this stage. Perhaps the most compelling aspect of my overture is this. If Cap is frozen out, it just seems that this whole ordeal will end in a fragmented fashion, leaving people to ruminate about its effects for generations to come. Win, lose, or draw, if Cap comes back and is given a chance, we have our answers and we can close the door on this subject. Now look how many NFL players have campaigned on his behalf. Most recently, Carlos Hyde and Malcolm Jenkins. Remember, like I said at the top, redemption is good for the soul. Now, to set the record straight, I was never a big Kaepernick fan. I just want to see him get a second chance. Frankly, I thought he was a glorified read option only quarterback. And when defenses figured him out, he quit before they cut him. Still, redemption is good for the soul. And for the record, I would never see Kaepernick as a victim. He was raised by two loving white parents. He was a standout for Chris Ault at Nevada. He had six full years in the NFL. In fact, he earned over $40 million in his career. Did you even know that? Cap had 58 starts in the NFL, and his record as a starter was 28-30. And yes, he went to a Super Bowl, something Belichick and company would dearly love to do that again. And by the way, the New England Patriots, well, they've had questionable characters on the roster before. Remember Aaron Hernandez? How about Antonio Brown? And don't forget Randy Moss. Robert Kraft was happy to sign Moss after he completely quit on the Raiders. Now, for the record, I did a commentary just like this on the radio back in 2010 when I wanted Michael Vick to get a second chance. He did, and it worked out. And frankly, I believe that Michael Vick had certainly paid his penance and it served no fruitful purpose to deny him opportunity at that time. Now, back in February, I also did the same thing for Pete Rose. Again, after 30 years, Pete has paid the price and it serves no fruitful purpose anymore to deny his reinstatement to baseball. Now comes Colin Kaepernick. The NFL has denied blackballing him. And I'm not here to argue either side. But if they have, it no longer serves any fruitful purpose to do so. See, for what it's worth, I get it. Some of you are probably pissed at me right now. What the hell are you talking about, Bernie? Don't you remember you wore pig socks and a Castro shirt and his girlfriend allegedly called some NFL execs slave owners? Look, let's go back to the top. Redemption is good for the soul. If given a chance, there's no telling what good might come out of this. In closing, I want to share a story that I've been wanting to tell on the air since before The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan series, remember a few weeks ago? And it has to do with the overused term dream team. And it's my final statement in that sometimes when given a chance, magic can happen. And that's why I think Kaepernick should be given a chance. Just like this little group of unknowns were right before the 1936 Olympic Games. Let me explain. You see, if I never hear the term dream team again, it'll be too soon. But let me take you back to the Berlin Olympics in 1936 and chronicle to what I believe is the only real dream team. See, back then, Olympic eligibility was different. And a little-known upstart AAU team from Hollywood, California, well, they were put together and threw their hat in the ring, and they were given a chance. And lo and behold, they survived several qualifying tournaments and even an 8-team round robin at Madison Square Garden. And in the end, they actually earned the right to represent the U.S. men's basketball team at the Berlin Olympics. But then the real fun began. This is an absolutely true story. After the players informed their respective employers that they intended to go compete in the Olympics, they were all told if they did so, they would not have jobs when they returned. They were undaunted. Well, all but one. One, they all made the trip except for one. They made the trip anyway, And then when they got to Berlin, they caught a break in the opening round. Their first opponent, Spain, well, they had to forfeit the game because the Spanish Civil War had broken out and they were called to come home. Not making this up. But then after that, they mowed down Estonia, the Philippines, and Mexico to set up the gold medal match against Canada, the home of basketball founder James Naismith, who ironically had been denied access to the games because of some paperwork snafu. Well, the U.S. actually won the game and won the gold medal. The final score was 19-8, and it was a rain-soaked contest. That's right. The game was played outside on a court made of sand and clay. And shortly thereafter, the players and their mud-drenched uniforms, they were all sporting gold medals for their achievement. All they needed was a chance. Remember, redemption is good for the soul. By the way, this was the first year basketball was an officially recognized Olympic sport. And it may have been the biggest story of the Olympic Games that year, if not for some guy named Jesse Owens, who also, all he needed was a chance. I hope you're listening, Mr. Kraft. Redemption is good for the soul. Let's see what happens. Aren't you at least a little curious? Get your free credit scorecard today, even if you're not a Discover customer. And include your FICO credit score, and checking your scorecard won't hurt your credit. Learn more at discover.com/credit scorecard. Limitations apply. Coming up, we're going to talk UFC. They have done a whale of a job these past few weeks, not only staying relevant, but breaking new ground, and there's much more news on the horizon. And you're going to like this guest, too, if we can just get this guy to get over his shyness. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. This is the pregame show you always wanted, so don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas.
Straight Outta Vegas!
The great Bernie Fratto, folks.
What does it mean when Geico says just 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance? It means you probably should have gone to geico.com 15 minutes ago. We're back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. And let's welcome in a gentleman. Well, he's omnipresent on the Fox Sports Radio airwaves. And in addition to all of his talents, he's a UFC aficionado. Now, I don't think he ever fought in the UFC, but word has it he once scrimmaged Fedor Emelianenko and choked him out. Let's say hello to Jonas Knox.
There he is, Bernie Fratto, my guy. What's happening, Bernie?
Jonas, thanks for coming on tonight, because the UFC has really done a fabulous job of remaining relevant during the whole world shutdown. And before, I want to tackle the elephant in the room first. After going 3-3 in his last three fights, Conor McGregor has retired for the third time. I say retired in air quotes. What was your knee-jerk reaction when you heard that?
I just think he's bored. Everything's a little bit up in the air right now. Look, Dana White has even alluded to this. Having Conor McGregor fight at these empty arenas, it's kind of a waste because he brings in so much money to the gate. And Dana talked about it. He said, man, you know, losing the Conor McGregor gate as far as the amount of tickets. And, you know, that's a big deal in Vegas, Bernie, when it's the number of people that show up, the celebrities, all of that. The pay-per-views are one thing. Those are really important. But it's also the gate, the number of people that are walking into the building, into the venue. And to lose that with Conor McGregor would be a big loss. I think McGregor's bored. I think he's been waiting around for certain fights to come about, and he's one of the unique UFC fighters in the history of the sport, maybe one of the only ones that can actually pick and choose who he wants to fight, because he's financially set for the rest of his life if he never fights again and takes a hit financially if something were to happen and all the other legal issues that are going on. He's in a perfect spot if he decides to retire. I've been saying this. I think he should retire. He should walk away. He's got nothing left to prove. The guy's done it all. He's won belts in multiple weight classes. He stopped guys in three different weight classes. He's got a clothing line. He's got a whiskey company. I think he'd be okay walking away. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think the temptation is too strong.
Yeah, you just alluded to that with respect to his side interests with his clothing and his whiskey. By the way, you probably already know this, but there are two lines in Vegas. Now, both of these events would have to take place by December 31st. or there's no action. But the minute Connor retired, Floyd called him out on Twitter. The word has it, you can't poo-poo this, that they might actually get in the ring again because there'd be big money. There's a line you can bet on it. And there's also a current line, Connor fighting Khabib. Which of those two you think are more likely to happen, or neither one maybe?
Connor Khabib. I think Connor Khabib happens. I don't think Floyd Connor happens. I think something more likely would be maybe a, and this has been thrown around, I don't think it's a strong likelihood, but a Conor McGregor Manny Pacquiao fight. I could see that possibly happening. I don't see the Floyd Mayweather. I don't see the Floyd Mayweather fight happening. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to do it again. It was a one-off situation. I loved it. I thought the event came off really well. I thought Conor McGregor made a good showing of himself. Now, me personally, conspiracy theorist, I think Floyd Mayweather had the over of 8.5 rounds in the fight. That's what I believe. Right. And I think he carried him, and I think he made a little bit of money on that. But that's just me being conspiracy theorist guy. But I think the Khabib fight is more likely to happen. I do think that there's a possibility that we could have a Conor McGregor Jorge Masvidal fight, which would be a massive draw. Both guys would make a ton of money. Anybody that fights Conor McGregor, it's the most money they're ever going to make, period. And that's hard to deny.
Oh, I agree with that 1,000%. And the reason I actually think Conor could fight Floyd again is because they both, well, Conor got a taste of that boxing money, which is a lot different than UFC money. And look, we're all suckers. Society's been infatuated with gladiator sports since the beginning of time. All right, let's fast forward to some reality. Justin Gaethje has really caught our eye, and I think you have your finger on the pulse of this kid. I just want to say this because I think he would really give Khabib a battle. Here's a kid who's an all-state wrestler or champion wrestler, but he stands up as well as anybody. But it's my understanding, Jonas, his game is to knock you out right away. He doesn't want to go deep. Wouldn't that be a problem against Khabib?
Well, here's the thing, and this is why I give Justin Gaethje a really good shot against Khabib, a guy like Justin Gaethje, because the other times that we've seen Khabib have a little bit of an issue or maybe struggle a little bit is when he's fighting somebody who's a good sprawler. Ally Akinta, who fought him on short notice, actually fought for 5 rounds, and it was a short notice fight. And Akinta did really, really well for himself. And you look at just sort of how Justin Gaethje matches up. First off, he's got murderous leg kicks, which is one of the fastest growing strikes in MMA, because people have figured out, and Justin Gaethje talked about this on Joe Rogan's podcast, in which he said, all it's going to take is for me to hit his calf 4 times, his lead calf, and he's completely crippled the rest of the fight. He's done. Those leg strikes on the calf muscle, not a big muscle, in which you can really do damage early on, and it's your lead foot, all of a sudden you're totally compromised. And if you're a wrestler and you can't push off that lead foot to explode to try and take somebody down, that's a real problem. Secondly, he hits like a monster truck. He has C4 in his hands. He hits you and you go to sleep. He finds the snooze button every single time, and he's got a mentality of a savage. This is a guy who legitimately said, I want Tony Ferguson in my last fight to break my nose. And the reason he wanted Tony Ferguson to break his nose is because he needs his nose fixed, because he can only breathe out of one side of it because it's taken so much damage. And he knows that if it breaks in a UFC fight, that UFC has to pay for the surgery. That's the next level thinking of a guy like that. And he's being 100% honest. He was totally from the heart. So when you get a guy like that in that sort of environment, I think it's a brilliant matchup. I think it's a really, really fun fight. They both share the same manager, so that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. But that's a great, great fight, and I look forward to it a lot.
I actually had heard that story. By the way, you're right. He's got thunder in his hands. Of his 22 wins, 19 are by knockout. But he has 2 losses. What was Achilles' heel in those, Jonas?
Oh, he just gets in there and realizes, you know, this is pretty fun. I'm going to stand and trade with these guys. And he gets clipped. And you see that, like, sometimes, like, and Cody Garbrandt's a perfect example. Cody Garbrandt is one of the most skilled boxers at the lower weight classes. His footwork, his speed, his power. He just fought a week ago and fought Ralphio Asensio, and I'm probably butchering his name just off the top of my head, but he fought him and cleaned him up on a sweeping right hand to end the round and put him out cold. And what Cody Garbrandt was always falling into is these firefights, these wars, to where he would just stand in the pocket and trade and forget all his discipline, all his God-given skills, everything that he's worked on all these years that made him a champion in his weight class, and then he'd get caught and he'd get knocked out. Justin Gaethje was the same guy. He would just stand in there, and it would start getting a little bit violent and a little bit rugged, and he just said, oh, screw it. I'm going to bite down my mouthpiece, and let's see who goes to bed first. That was his mentality. And then in recent years, he switched, and his coach, Trevor Whitman, talked about it, and he said, I asked him, what do you want to do? What's your goal? And Justin Gaethje said, I want to be a world champion. He said, okay, cool. Then no more of that. Because you can't be a world champion if you're going to stand up and get hit in the face and go to bed every time you fight. You got to be smarter about it. Since he's made those adjustments, he's been a completely different fighter.
We're talking with Fox Sports Radio mogul Jonas Knox. You're right. He lost twice back-to-back a couple years ago, but he's beaten some good fighters, Tony Ferguson, Donald Cerrone. Let's look ahead to Fight Island. I think we're all kind of fascinated by this. UFC 251 coming up July 11th. There are actually three championship bouts on that card.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really fun. Just even if you don't know any of the fighters, all right, even if you're somebody who doesn't know Peter Yan, who's going to be fighting Jose Aldo for the vacant belt, or even if you don't know, Volkanovski versus Max Holloway, who's one of the most exciting fighters out of Hawaii, or if you're somebody who doesn't know much about Kamaru Usman, who just is coming off winning the title and a great classic fight against Colby Covington the last time out. Even if you don't know anything about those guys, the fact that we've got a cage on a beach in Abu Dhabi should be enough reason alone for people to want to tune in. Dana White, for all the criticism and all the stuff about fighter pay and all the other things that people want to say about him, of all the sports that are going right now, Major League Baseball players and Major League Baseball owners are bitching and moaning and are going to roll out a 48-game crap bag. And the UFC's got a cage set up on a beach in Abu Dhabi, and they've had like 7 events. They had a guy test positive the night before a fight and 2 of his cornermen and still put on the entire card. I think the UFC, in what you started out at the top of this segment in talking about how they've really shined through all this, a cage on a beach, I think that's the cherry on the sundae. It's been a fantastic run for the entire organization.
Final question as we wrap it up with Jonas Knox. After Amanda Nunes beat Cyborg in less than a minute, can anybody touch Amanda Nunes?
The only fighter that I would give a chance, but she's smaller, is Valentina Shevchenko. And if you haven't watched her, she is a savage and a world-class striker, puts people to sleep. The problem is, because she's a weight class lower and the fact that they've already fought a couple of times and they were close fights, the idea of matching those two up again doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The fight that would have made the most sense is if you would have had a rematch between Nunez and Chris Cyborg, who everybody felt like those were the two top female fighters in the world, pound for pound. And when you saw what Nunez did to Cyborg, you would assume, okay, maybe a rematch. And then Cyborg started making accusations against the UFC. They washed their hands on a contract, and she moved on to Bellator, and she's no longer in the company.
Jonas, can't thank you enough for coming on tonight. We'll catch you tomorrow night. Brady Quinn, 5 o'clock Pacific. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Appreciate it, Bernie. You're the man.
Thanks so much. It's Jonas Knox, among his many talents, clearly knows his stuff on the UFC. And catch him. He's all over the map. Many shows. If I start to list him, I'll run out of time, and we've got a lot of stuff to get to. But Jonas Knox is the man. All right, coming up, Sleepy's got a best bet, and you can get on it tomorrow, a little event in Florida. And, yeah, I'm going to weigh in on my final thoughts on baseball. Looks like we're going to have baseball, and I'll tell you how we got to this point and what you can expect next. But first, let's go to the man who's so cool. He once flirted with danger until danger got just a little too needy. So like his buddy Snoop Dogg told him, drop it like it's hot. It's Brian Finley with the latest.
Oh, Bernie, that was my mantra in high school. Major League Baseball and the Players Association have run up the count on options for a season. The union vomiting at MLB's latest offer on Saturday. So Union Executive Director Tony Clark cautioning owners, the Players Association is finito with the pillow talk and negotiations. They'll only play with prorated salaries. So MLB, tell us when you want to start the season and we'll be there. Major League Baseball countering in part, quote, with a message saying, "We are disappointed that the MLBPA has chose not to negotiate in good faith over resumption of play," end quote. And according to ESPN, the Players Association wants MLB to release its plans by the end of this Monday, and the signs are pointing towards a season right around 50 games or so. Dale Earnhardt Jr. teasing Saturday's NASCAR Xfinity Series by saying it would be his last in a race car. He finished fifth at the event with Harrison Burton taking the checkers. Catch all the exhilaration of the Cup Series on Sunday as the green flag drops at 3:30 Eastern on Fox TV. The PGA Tour is back up and running. Xander Schauffele reigning over the field by one stroke at the Charles Schwab Challenge in Fort Worth. He carded a 4-under 66. Jordan Spieth is hanging on with a second place standing with one round to go in a six-way tie for second place. And word is Bernie Fratto is still on that course, hacking away. Back to you, Bernie.
And those are the dulcet tones of Brian Finley opening up for Shecky Green and the Catskills Tuesday. All right. By the way, next week, mark your calendars. At this time, Chris Perfette will be making a Straight Out of Vegas debut. He's going to talk about esports and the evolution of esports and betting on esports, which has gotten some real traction here in the last 90 days. All right. Tomorrow, there's a little event in Florida. It's called the Dixie Vodka 400. It's a NASCAR event that will take place in Homestead, and Sleepy reappears on Straight Out of Vegas, and he's got a very solid play for tomorrow's race, which I believe starts about 3:30 Eastern. Let's give it a listen.
Okay, Bernie, let's give our listeners some instant action as we go to Homestead Miami Speedway for a little NASCAR action on Sunday. Now, you can watch this one unfold on Fox at 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 Pacific. And I really like Kyle Busch to finish in the top five. This is a wager you can find at DraftKings. Kyle Busch to finish top five? Yes, at minus 110. Now, Bernie, I can't unwrap my head around how strong Busch has finished at this racetrack the last 5 years. 2015, he came in first. 2016, sixth place finish. 2017, came in second. 2018, fourth. And last year, 2019, again, Kyle Busch came in first. So Kyle Busch has finished four of the last 5 years within the top five. One thing I know about Kyle Busch, he loves this racetrack, and he's tied right now for the lead with top five finishes this season. Kyle Busch also had some tough luck last week in Martinsville as he finished 19th after some early contact and car damage. I think Kyle Busch really will be looking to go ahead and rebound. Also, Kyle Busch starts fourth in tomorrow's race, so he's up front. I see a Kyle Busch rebounding here in a big way tomorrow, and I think he gets us to the checker flag with cash in hand for us. So my best bet for Sunday, Bernie, I'm going ahead. I'm going to the NASCAR race at Homestead, Miami, the Dixie Vodka 400. Kyle Busch to place in the top five, yes, at minus 110.
There you have it. You say there's no sports going on? Well, sure there are. And McKenzie gave a best bet last week that hit Friday. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Thanks, Sleepy. Okay, so there is where you want to be tomorrow. Homestead, NASCAR, Dixie Vodka 400. Kyle Busch to finish in the top five. Basically even money. Seems like a solid bet to me. Well, I'll tell you what has not been a solid bet is watching these knucklehead owners and players in Major League Baseball knock heads for the past couple of months. I think at this point they both need to get themselves a cold compress and lie down with some warm milk and soft music, because they've got to play a season and they've got to, you know, save some face. And there's going to be, now based on what happened today, and I saw this coming, if you'd followed my tweets since back on May 16th, and again, I covered the 1994 strike for WTK in Ann Arbor. I said all along the tenor, the tone, the mood between both sides, the inability to be flexible and negotiate. This has never been a negotiation. It's been a It's been what I would call a test of wills and really a game of chicken. And I joke with Arnie and Aaron, I call it the Yogi Berra negotiations. You know, there's an old joke. Yogi Berra walked into a pizza parlor once and said, "I'm starving. I could eat a whole pizza." He said, "Come right out, coming right up, Yogi. You want that cut in six slices or eight?" He said, "You better cut it in six. I don't think I can eat eight." Well, what's the moral of the story? That's the same with the owner's offers these past 3 or 4 weeks. No matter what offer they made, if you do the math in terms of the number of games and the prorated percentage of the salary they were willing to pay, it came out the same every time, 33%. You don't believe me? Well, they were willing to pay 100% pro rata on 50 games. The most recent offer was 72 games, 70%. Well, I'd do the math. That's like being paid 49, 50 games. Now, I know if they went to the postseason and completed the postseason, then it would jump to 80%. Now, how do we get to this point? Because both sides dug in, and both sides were willing to die on their own little hill. For the players, they were simply not going to accept anything less than 100% pro rata for the number of games they played. For the owners, they realized that without fans in the stands, they were going to lose $640,000 per game for every game that's not played with fans in the stands. So they wanted to keep that number to a minimum while at the same time maintaining the integrity of a full postseason so that they can collect basically their $787 million in their postseason TV package, which would make them somewhat whole. Here's the beauty. They get to do this again next year because the collective bargaining agreement that they're currently under expires in December of 2021. Now, do I think baseball will start on time in April 2021 and have a normal season? I do. But watch out after that because it's going to get ugly. And instead of treating this little agreement so they could resume a season as a one-off, because no one really believes they're going to have three divisions. No one really believes they're going to have geographical play and no fans in the stands and probably not even a universal DH and all those things. This is a one-off season, but they didn't treat it as that. They treated it as a warm-up for their CBA negotiation next year, and it was already going to be contentious, and I'll tell you exactly why. The players are bent. They're bent because they believe the owners have been using the luxury tax as a de facto salary cap. Why do we say that? Well, first of all, only two teams exceeded the $197 million threshold last year of the current luxury tax cap. Now, go back to 2008. Baseball was a $5 billion industry, and at that point, the luxury tax was $155 million per team. Now, baseball is an $11 billion industry, and the luxury tax has only risen to $197 million per team. So do the math. The game has doubled in revenues, but the luxury tax threshold has only gone up about 24%. That's why the players are mad. They see their revenues incrementally dwindling year by year. Draw a parallel to 1994. I've said all along, this is just like 1994. Why? Because the owners wanted a salary cap in 1994 as well. And make no mistake, they'd like to have one now. An Arizona Diamondbacks executive said as much last week. And if you go back to 94, the players, in their revisionist history, would take you back to the 50s in the golden age of baseball when baseball was at its peak. Prior to TV entering the fray in the 50s, which created the golden age of baseball, you had a player revenues at about 35%. But when TV revenues came into the game and the owners didn't share them, well, as time marched on and they got to the 60s, player revenues dipped to almost 15, you know, about 15%. By the time 1994 rolled around, it still hadn't gotten back to 35%. Hence, the situation where the players saw their revenues declining, the game growing, the owners wanted a salary cap, voila, they canceled the World Series. Fast forward to the future, which is now. Not too dissimilar in terms of the mistrust, the dislike, and the anger. And they played it out in front of God and everybody, and you all saw it. So what I think will happen is Rob Manfred next week will exercise his executive privilege and mandate a season. It could be 50 games. It could be 55, 60. I don't know. No one knows what the number is. Jim Bowden thinks it's going to be 70. I don't. I think it'll be less. But there's going to be games. And the player, whenever they announce a deal, they'll need 10 days to deploy, 3 weeks of spring training, so add a month. So if let's just say they come to an agreement June 20th, I think you could see games as early as July 20th. These are just samples. And by the way, The players have to show up. They can't not show up, because that would be in violation of their CBA. And, oh, by the way, it would be considered an illegal strike. However, when they do show up, you can bet they're going to file a grievance. So the ugliness is going to continue. Stay tuned. Get your free credit scorecard today, even if you're not a Discover customer. It includes your FICO credit score, and checking your scorecard won't hurt your credit. Learn more at discover.com/credit scorecard. Limitations apply. Coming up, you know him, you love him, you can't live without him. It is Mackinac Sports. We're going to talk about his last best bet, which hit, his next best bet, and chop up this NBA scenario, which took on a different flavor last night. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. This is the pregame show you always wanted, so don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas.
Straight Outta Vegas!
One of the best in the business, Bernie Fratto.
We are back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. And before I go any further, let me thank my broadcast team back in Los Angeles. Eric Roberts, Chris Perfett, Brian Finley. As usual, great job keeping us on the air, turning all the dials, keeping us glued together. All right, you know him, you love him, you can't live without him. Mackinon Sports back again for another segment. By the way, let's give credit where credit is due. Last week, he gave a best bet. Bundesliga Soccer, another road favorite. RP Leipzig, 2, Hoffenheim, 0. Good call.
And they covered the spread. In a couple minutes, I'll have another best bet for you guys.
All right, so hang on for that. But let's not bury the lead in terms of the NBA. Last night, Kyrie Irving held a little conference call.
Man.
Who knew? Dr. Drew. I like that movie, by the way.
Uncle Drew, one of the classics.
Uncle Drew.
One of the great classics in American cinema.
Youngblood. Your turn, Youngblood.
So Kyrie Irving did enter the wisdom mentor aspect of his personality. Well, what an interesting character. So these are some of the quotes he said on an hour, 40-minute call with up to 200 players, reports say, talking about how he's not down with what everybody's so excited about, getting basketball back in Orlando. "I don't support going into Orlando," Kyrie said. "I'm not with the systematic racism and the BS. He didn't say BS, of course. "Something smells a little fishy. Ah, the paranoid black man, my man, close to my heart. Something smells a little fishy," he says. And then later on, he says, "I'm willing to give up everything I have for social reform." Kyrie Irving, what a divisive character. Everyone's got an opinion on him. How do you feel about the great Kyrie Irving?
Well, he's a good player. He wasn't going to play this year. I'm a little confused because last week he was on a similar conference call and all he was wondering was what they were serving for dinner.
That's true.
And you know, the pregame beverages and all that kind of stuff. Is he sincere? And by the way, one big-time player, you may have heard of him, was conspicuously absent from that call.
That's true. LeBron James. His old teammate. I think he is sincere, and I think he was very particular about why he affirmed the call. He voted yes, and now, a week later, comes out with this. I don't think it's an accident. I think it's exactly to get people like you, Bernie, frustrated and mad, and what is this guy thinking? So let me start here.
Go ahead.
Kyrie's great. He's not good. He's great. He's one of the great players in the NBA.
Agreed.
4 years ago today, he put up 41 points in Game 5 of the 2016 NBA Finals, taking over in the fourth quarter. If you look at a points per minute for a guards in the NBA Finals, minimum 3, Michael Jordan, Jerry West, Kyrie Irving. Only 3 to put up those kind of numbers in the Finals. In fact, last year, he had an off year last year, people said. If you look at his stats, 23 points, 6 assists, 40% from 3. Let's see, who else has done that? Curry, 5 times, Bird, LeBron, and Kyrie. That's it. That's the list.
Well, he hit the big killer shot when Cleveland
beat. He's one of the most efficient scores in the guard, if any guard in history. So let's start there. Let's just get that on the table. People want to say, "Oh, the Celtics did better without him." He's great. He's a great player. But this is who he is. He's Monty Brewster from Brewster's Millions. Except that was the great Richard Pryor movie where Richard
John
Pryor,
Candy,
yep, had to blow,
Lynette McKee.
He had to blow $30 million in 30 days, and he couldn't tell anybody about it. So to everybody, he looks crazy. except Kyrie Irving, he's Monty Brewster, except he has to lose 100% of approval from 30-year-old and over white guys throughout the U.S. I don't know what his plan is, but that is the end result. He is trying to piss off every Steve Fezzik, who's like, "You're taking the NBA away from me."
Okay, what do you think? Well, let me jump in here. First of all, he doesn't frustrate me. I could give a flying horse's patoot what he says. He thinks the Earth's flat, and then we didn't go to the moon. Kyrie, you want to putt from the rough? Knock yourself out. I don't care what you say.
Exactly.
And I do think he's a good player. I can hold two thoughts concurrently, okay?
Most people can't. He gets in their head when you say, "Oh, the world is flat." They think he's crazy.
I don't care. I couldn't care less.
Okay.
Let's get to your best bet because we're running out of time. But I will say this. My final thought is I don't think there's any chance that the NBA does not play. And I don't really know what the hell that meeting was about. And the owners and the players, believe me, it's in their best interest to protect the integrity of $900 million in TV revenue so they don't screw up the CBA for next year. You got the last word. What's your best bet?
I'll just say I think it was about this kind of conversation right here. I think he wants to spark a little tension. You can't protest unless you're protesting against something. So the fact that everybody's mad, Kyrie's happy about that. Here's my best bet. So road teams in soccer, it's just insane. Look at Spanish league. They're doing the same thing the German league. The German league road teams, 11-0-4 against the spread road teams in the last 15. It just keeps hitting. It's just crazy. So I'm going to go back to it. The German teams, their road teams are already too pricey. I'm going to go to Spain, Atletico Madrid, +131 tomorrow at Atletico Bilbao.
All right. Do you know what time that goes off our time?
5:30. I'm going to be up.
Very good. Good
tweet
for
me.
You. You're all over
live
the soccer. All right, folks. That is going to do it for this week's edition of Straight Out of Vegas. I'm Bernie Fratto. I want to thank Jonas Knox for coming up tonight. Next up, the man who brings it from Nashville. It is Jason Martin and the Jason Martin Show. Keep it locked.
Straight Out of Vegas!